The World Tomorrow. Ambassador College presents Garner Ted Armstrong, bringing you the plain truth about today's world news and the prophecies of the world tomorrow.
And greeting friends around the world. Looking back over the past year, and every time we go around the corner of another holiday season, people wonder about predictions for the new year. And, of course, the major networks and news services usually give us a sort of a synopsis of the news of the past year. This happens every year with almost inexorable monotony. Wouldn't it be wonderful, however, if you could look 5 years ahead or 10 years and really know in advance what is going to occur? If you could really know when the war in Vietnam was going to be over. If you could know in advance what's going to happen in Asia, what's going to happen about the Chinese atomic bomb, and the idea that perhaps by 1970 or earlier, she will have a hydrogen bomb ready, and that not only all of Asia, but even the United States could come under the possible target selection for Chinese nuclear weapons. If you could know in advance what this world was going to be like in 1975, 85, 90, you know, some of those who predict the future claim you might not even want to be around. You know, most of the predictions for the future tend to oscillate between that of wildest optimism and that of the deepest gloom. On the one hand, science and industry seems to promise us a dazzling, glittering, wonderful world of fantastic leisure, of pleasure, of scientific gadgetry, of all the mechanical playthings that we feel are going to make our life infinitely more exciting and more varied. And on the other hand, serious world leaders, political personnel or people in high political offices, and of course, oftentimes you find, well, professors of history and sociologists and those in our big universities and cultural centers who try to put their fingers on the pulse of the world, and they tell us something else again. Their predictions are rather gloomy. I have before me a collection of quotations from such people as Dr. Urey, Dr. Osgood, former President Eisenhower, Winston Churchill, Ufant, Dr. Edward Teller, the father of the A-bomb. I want you to hear what they have to say about what might be ahead for Mr. and Mrs. World in the future. At a world conference on peace through law, for example, not so long ago, Ufant, Secretary General of the United Nations, asked many of the prominent delegates attending, and I quote his words, "What element is lacking so that with all our skill and our knowledge, we still find ourselves in the dark valley of discord and enmity? What is it that inhibits us from going forward together to enjoy the fruits of human endeavor and to reap the harvest of human experience? Why is it that, for all our professed ideals, our hopes, and our skill, peace on earth is still a distant objective, seen only dimly through the storms and turmoils of our present difficulties?" End of quote from Ufant. Yes, what element is still lacking, we wonder. We can figure out how to put a man in orbit, but we still can't figure out why our marriages fall apart, what makes the kid next door go wrong, why somebody pours gasoline on an innocent man and sets him afire for the sheer fun of it. We can't figure why 1 out of 6 of our youths under 18 has been in front of a juvenile court judge, and why 1 out of 10 of our people walking the streets in the United States today are mentally ill, more than 19 million Americans. We can't figure what it is that's wrong with us mentally, emotionally, spiritually, physically, but we can sure enough figure how to put a man in orbit, and maybe even how to get him to the moon and back again safely. You know, the one biggest and most singularly pressing need of mankind today, if you were to sit around and analyze with friends over eggnog, something other than just the weather, and you were to sit around and analyze and kick this back and forth and toss it around, if the world had what it really needed, what would it have? Kind of like a game you could play. What does the world need most desperately today? Would you say more scientists? Bigger armies? Stronger leaders? Oh, sure, I know people would say peace, but I mean peace has to be kept and guarded. And peace has to be achieved, but there has to be a method for keeping that peace secure and winning it once it's achieved. You know, we thought we were going to have peace in 1945. I remember roaring up and down Main Street in a truck and honking a horn and jumping up and down and throwing crepe paper with everybody else, saying, "Peace at last!" Oh, that was sure a short-lived Enjoyment, wasn't it? By the year of 1946, suddenly, with a shock, we began to realize what was happening in the UN and what was happening in Central Europe and about the corridors of travel. And then the airlift came along. Boy, if we didn't come up short and get a shock. I mean, those of us of the younger generation at that time who were just teenagers who thought that Russia was our ally. Now, you know, you wake up in gradual stages, perhaps. Oh, we thought we had peace then. A captured German geopolitical document that has been given certain circulation since in certain books. This was from Madrid in 1950, said the Americans have lost the peace, the Cold War, and their whole future, but they're not yet aware of it. Now, those were rather starkly terrifying words, but the amazing factor is that they've practically come to pass. We lost the peace. We didn't guard it. We haven't preserved it, so we don't have peace today. Would you say we need more Harvard or Princeton or Yale graduates or more West Point graduates? What do we need? More universities? More educational and cultural centers? What do we need? A solution to our urban problems? Do we need more safety devices on automobiles? Do we need to solve our smog and our air and water and food pollution problems, first of all? What do we need? Decentralization of massive populations? What do we need? An end to the racial hatreds? Do we need one world religion? If you sat around and wondered, what do we need the most? The way to epitomize it, the way to point out the greatest single need of mankind, is to listen for a moment to what Sir Winston Churchill said in Copenhagen back in 1950. He said the creation of an authoritative, all-powerful world order is the ultimate aim towards which we must strive. Unless some effective world super-government can be brought quickly into action, the proposals for peace and human progress are dark and doubtful. Former President Eisenhower said in a radio and televised speech in 1960, it had become clear by 1953, he said, that the accumulation of atomic weapon stockpiles whose use could destroy civilization made resort to force an intolerable means for settling international disputes. Only in the rule of law, which meant the attainment of an enduring peace with justice, could mankind hope for guarantee against extinction. In his words, rule of law. Sir Winston Churchill, world super government. Dr. Charles Osgood of the University of Illinois said, what we need, and that most urgently, is an enlivened search for new alternatives to war as a means of resolving human conflict. A world government may be the only permanent solution. Not so long ago, Dr. Harold C. Urey, who is a Nobel Prize winner and a chemistry professor at the University of California, told a Southern California Rotary Club that one world government is the only way to prevent a catastrophe, a World War III. He said that is the only way, but he went on to state that talk of a full world government is not practical. The scientist said he did not think that the chance of creating a world state was very likely. Now, Dr. Edward Teller, a noted physicist who was prominent in developing the atomic bomb, said international law hardly exists today. Yet it's one of our most vital needs. We must work for the establishment of a world authority sustained by moral force and physical force, a world government capable of enforcing worldwide law. This is what serious leaders of government, university professors, top scientists, and others have had to say about it. Now, in the last program, as I was summarizing conditions today and showing you there is some good news beyond, and in spite of the seeming hopelessness of the situation, world government can come, I showed you how a complete survey of present trends and then walking right on out into the future with it was given and was quite widely spread through the news media of the United States, and how this one man in the Hudson Institute, in analyzing everything all put together, Dr. Herman Kahn, said in sort of summarizing the entire picture, in looking at society in general, that the cities of 1985, intensified by social, ethnic, and racial problems, will be seething centers of periodically great turmoil and confusion. The report went on to say that for the underdeveloped part of the world in about 1985, the plight of the average man will have deteriorated. People, said the report, will be more poorly fed, and there will be fewer goods per person. Every attempt to improve the situation will be wiped out by the continued population growth. Hunger, starvation, and famine, periodically and continuously, will stalk major portions of the planet in 1985. Can you imagine that the plight of the average man, said the report, would have deteriorated when already is incredible, on the brink of starvation, disease-ridden, illiterate, poorly clothed, poorly housed, absolute wretchedness in much of the earth today? How do you deteriorate from that state? And then, the report almost unbelievably said, probably for the first time in history, every child everywhere will be in school. But that is if they are not starving in a famine, the report went on to add. If they are not starving in a famine. Now, is that the kind of a prediction you like to hear? But that's what you hear in the news of today. The prognostications of science, of industry, of government, of the military are not so happy, are they? Now, almost everybody's having a hand at trying to predict the future these days. One producer of a TV series on the 21st century trying to show not necessarily just the future, but personal futures of people said, we will show some of the most advanced work in progress. He meant scientific work, and he said it is astonishing. And then he even set aside these dates. By research available to the program, he said he figured that by 1982, artificial plastic and electronic organs would be available for humans. By 2007, biochemicals to aid in the growth of new organs and limbs. By 2012, drugs to raise the level of human intelligence. By 2020, the human brain linked with computers to enlarge man's intellect. By 2050, he envisioned control of the aging process to extend your lifespan another 50 years. And the predictions are almost endless. But wouldn't you rather have your own kidneys, your own organs and limbs? Wouldn't you rather just improve your own intelligence? Wouldn't you rather just keep your own brain and let the computer work by itself? Economists, sociologists, geneticists, psychiatrists, zoologists, biologists, anthropologists, you name them, they're all having a hand at predicting what the world tomorrow may bring. But when you take a look at all of it together, the predictions of science and industry, economists and the rest, of the wildly optimistic view of a glittering, dazzling, wonderful, fantastic, gadget-filled Disneyland of pleasure and luxury, and on the other hand, the widely divergent view of serious-minded government leaders, military leaders, sociologists, and others who are frankly concerned about whether or not humankind will even survive, then you're just left sort of wondering, because as if with one voice, they all tell you a world government is the only solution. But at another time, Dr. Edward Teller sort of summarized the whole picture when he said, how to enforce law and order? And how to bring about such a law enforcement agency, the one he spoke of, a world authority, sustained by moral and physical force, how to bring it about in a quick and effective and just and decent manner? That is a question of enormous difficulty. I have no solution, he said. I have no particular competence to say how it should be done. I can only foresee technical developments both for war and peace which make it necessary that we make some progress, and fast progress, along this line. But we are not making progress along that line. We are rather retrogressing, and this world is reaching a state of ferment and chaos unparalleled in all of human history. And for those in whose breast beats the desire for an end to the war in Vietnam, let me shock you by saying that just as sure as it ends there, it will probably start somewhere else. Can you pick a spot? You could practically play pin the tail on the donkey with a world map, and you could say Panama, the Congo, the Middle East, divided Germany. You could say somewhere in Malaysia, or the Philippines area, or nationalist China, or you could say Malaysia area, or you could just sort of take your pick around the world. Wherever there are seething, steeping, boiling trouble spots today, tomorrow they could be of Korean and Vietnam proportions, another one of the hot wars that constantly plague us. There have been more than 40 wars since the close of World War II, and a big one is going on today with an expenditure of $26 million a day for the war effort alone.
That's the United States commitment, not including Australia, not including the Philippines and other countries. It costs an awful lot of money to kill every Viet Cong today. Somebody was humorously figuring that what ought to happen is that all the natives ought to be evacuated, and then they could seriously talk about terms for peace. If they could get all the Vietnamese to relinquish the control of the country and simply move elsewhere, then we could leave the others to fight it out. The ideas are rife, aren't they? There are plenty of them. Everybody, however, wants peace in Vietnam. The fellows who are dying, who are hurting, who are being injured, they would like to see peace occur before they have to go. So would I, and so would you. But what are our chances? Leading figures come back and say they're very pessimistic about any peace in Vietnam for a long time to come. And some have seriously predicted they figure it will be going on up until 1982. How's that for a prediction? Well, my friends, it's about time we heard some good news for a change. Now, when you take a look at what is being said by these statesmen, scientists, educators, world leaders, the concepts, the widely divergent points of view, do you know that they are all in error? Do you know that in spite of the seeming hopelessness of the situation, world government can and it will come? And there is a book that tells exactly how. There's a complete outline that shows how this world will find world peace. At last, peace with justice, an authoritative world ruling government. How many millions of people in listening to The World Tomorrow over a long period of time find, with the surprise of their lives, that there's an awful lot of really good news right there between the covers of their Bibles. One third of the Bible is prophecy. You probably didn't know that. And prophecy can be proved. And you probably didn't realize that the prophecies of the Bible directly foretell our era and the world beyond. You may not have known, for example, after hearing me quote, for instance, from Hu Thanh, from Winston Churchill, from former President Eisenhower, from Dr. Osgood, Dr. Urey, Dr. Teller, you probably didn't know that the whole point of the message of Jesus Christ was world government. The establishment of a world ruling government of peace through justice, a world authoritative force that would guard and keep the peace, that would bring about final religious unity, an end to race wars, the solution to the population explosion, the end of growing drought and famine, an end to the diseases and the infirmities and the mental aberrations that plague mankind, a complete revolution in the weather. Did you know the Bible tells about these things, about vast governmental reforms, about a re-education of the whole world, about the adoption of one world calendar, the adoption of one world language? Now, many people with many altruistic and rather selfless motivations are trying frantically to push through this or the other program, the other movement. But usually, always, it's only a one-faceted program to deal with one specific area of the problems confronting mankind. There may be packages for Korean War veterans and food for Asians and clothing for downtrodden areas, sure. Care packages and all that type of thing. And perhaps they're accomplishing some good. And then there are the ideas about calendar reform. And then there are the ideas about world government, such as the attempt of the League of Nations, and then, of course, the United Nations. But they don't achieve it. Leaders tell you, as if with one voice, world government is the only solution, and then they turn around and say, but world government is impossible. But there is a book that tells you it is not impossible, that it is very possible, and it's going to occur. Now, you may not have realized that the prophecies of the Bible directly foretell our era, that this age with a capacity for human annihilation was predicted in the Bible. And even many who do know somewhat of the prophecies of the Bible tend to assume that nearly all of them are destructive, that they are gloomy predictions of disease and death, apocryphal calamities, wars, and the like. But the Bible foretells the outcome. It does what other predictions never do. It admits the potential calamities. It describes completely the chaos of our time, and it takes into account the realities of the present, but it shows the good news beyond. I have before me a booklet that you need to read that tells you about this good news that goes right down the line in chapter after chapter and book after book in the Bible and tells you exactly how one world religion, one world calendar, one world language, one world government, and inter-race wars, the solution even to the problems of the weather, controlled climate, believe it or not. Sure, science talks about expanding the lifespan, about even controlling the weather and seeding hurricanes and maybe guaranteeing you a nice pleasurable climate in which to live. But here's a program that tells you how it will be done and how it will be accomplished. And this booklet entitled The Wonderful World Tomorrow, What It Will Be Like, is in full color. You can read it at one sitting. It goes right down the line with it. It's specific. It's practical. It's up to the moment. It's so up to the moment, it's beyond today's world news by quite a few years. Inside of it is a sort of a would-be, could-be, perhaps newspaper that tells you the kind of news you could be reading and will be reading in the time ahead. Most of the predictions you hear today are kind of gloomy. Bad news and more of it. Here is a book that is chock full of good news. News that you would desperately want to hear. When you talk to people and you ask them, what news would you rather hear above all else? They would say, well, however they might express it, they will say peace. It's the most single dominating desire in the heart of mankind today. A rehabilitated, renewed, peaceful world. A time of the restitution of all things, a time of absolute peace, where people are not at each other's throats all the time, where we're living in a time of peace. Then, when we've got peace, we can have a time of equal opportunity, of all the great and lofty slogans of mankind. This booklet tells you how that can be. It doesn't ask you to bring it about. It tells you it's going to come about in spite of anything mankind does. But instead of the wildly divergent opposite views of science on the one hand and world leaders on the other, this booklet tells you the real truth about the way this world will be. Now let me just give you a few excerpts from it. Here toward the latter sections of this book is a section on how dry mountains become fertile valleys. Now we say, is that impossible? Look at the vast areas of reclamation today, of reforestation, the programs that are put through at vast expense. And on the other hand, the futility of some of it, because just as soon as you try to impound water, you end up by drowning all kinds of natural lakes and streams, by inundating thousands of acres of potential forested wildlife areas. Surely it's impossible in the hands of man. We can't see any way out of it. You take the Aswan Dam in Egypt, and by the time it's completed and those extra acres made arable, as I've said before, Egypt will have stood still, because the increased population will have meant that the increased acreage will be proportionate to the exact conditions of 10 years ago. But what about a prediction that says, when the poor and needy seek water and there is none, I, the Eternal, will hear them. I will open rivers in high places and fountains, artesian wells, in the midst of the valleys. I will make the wilderness a pool of water and the dry land springs of water. What causes dry cycles? What causes bad weather? What causes the vast snow-swept and craggy mountains that were raised up on this earth and the huge areas like the Kalahari Desert in Botswanaland, the Lake Chad Basin in French Equatorial Africa, the Sahara, the Gobi, the Great American Deserts? How could you make them green and fertile? You know, there is a vast program unearthed in the Bible that says it will occur. People have thought about maybe melting the ice packs and the snowdrifts and the permafrost and tundra and the vast limitless expanses of Antarctica, of North America, Greenland, Northern Europe, and Siberia. They've wondered about the fact that only about 15% of the Earth's surface is inhabitable and 7.7% of it arable. How can you increase that? Here's a program that shows how. In this booklet, chapter after chapter, scripture after scripture out of the Bible that gives good news. Now, most people think the Bible's filled with a lot of horrible predictions about suffering and pain. Listen, the Bible merely admits both sides. The Bible merely takes a completely analytical and honest view of conditions, the way mankind has brought them about, and the facts of the way the world really is today, which most people aren't willing to do. Most people don't want to look at the facts the way they really are because it sort of is depressing. The Bible is willing to admit the way it is and the way it shall become, but out of the chaos of today, it shows you the good news of the way the world will be tomorrow. Now in this booklet, as an insert, is this could-be newspaper. Tabloid size, 4 pages, gives you articles and headlines such as these. I have it right here before me. Millions hail King of Kings, an awesome demonstration.
worldwide science students progressing in unlearning courses. Nobody beats about India's record beats. An article on how total disarmament is achieved. An article on revolution in the weather for the better. An article on a German reforestation program. And headlines of the past. Fantastic articles, articles of good news, a farm labor surplus, bumper crops in India, Egypt recovers from drought, learns obedience, pays dividends. Articles about nations that exist today in the future the way it can be and the way it will be. How ancient history is unscrambled, how truth and the foundation of all knowledge is being taught in the world's classroom. Write for this booklet on The Wonderful World Tomorrow, What Will It Be Like? Here is an article on migration to farms. Did you know that in the United States, the average age of farmers today is 54? How young people are leaving the farms and going to the cities? Here's an article that tells you that's going to reverse itself. Another one on New World Rehabilitation Summit Conference convened. Divorce totally eliminated. How do you like that headline? It's in this newspaper you will read. New pure language sweeps the earth. How do you like that one? All nations convert to new tongues. Pagan words eliminated. People don't use such crazy words as catastrophe. That means the stars are against us. Superstitious words out of darkened evil pasts. Here's one for you. Jew-Arab animosity overcome. Here's another one on a renaming project to call places and cities by correct names. You'll really enjoy reading this because it's right out of the Bible, just the way it could be. It shows you the good news, not the way the world is today, but the way it could be tomorrow. Now, we've had a lot of letters, and I'd like to take time to read you just a couple of comments. Here was one on a person who had written about the New World News, and how she just had to keep getting up. She said, "What an experience. Through the New World News," that was this newspaper, a tabloid size, it could have been. It's fictitious in a sense, and yet it's taken, of course, from the Bible and predicting on into the future. "For the last hour or two, I have actually lived in the world tomorrow." She said, "Millions hail King of Kings," caused tears of joy and thanksgiving. "I had to get up for Kleenex so often, finally just brought the whole box along to the chair and proceeded to lose all thought of this present wicked world and savor every word, every picture in that remarkable newspaper. It's an answer to prayers, asking God to make the world tomorrow real to us now that we may not waver when things get rough. Thank you so much." You know, you will be amazed when you see it, and you'll be gratified, you'll be made happy. At least for a little while, you get a little bit of a preview of what the world can be like. It's worth having the world that way, we all agree. As to how to achieve it, well, people have widely divergent ideas, but this tells you exactly what will occur. So write for it. I'll be going through different sections of it for a few programs to show you how Bible prophecy, believe it or not, predicts the way this world is going to be. One world government, the hope and the desire of such men as Sir Winston Churchill, former President Eisenhower, President Johnson, former President Kennedy, U Thant, government leaders around the world, but it tells you how it will come to pass. It's free of charge, there's no price for it, full color, by the way, throughout. All you need to do is to send your letter to Herbert W. Armstrong, Box 111, Pasadena, California. That's Herbert W. Armstrong, Post Office Box 111, Pasadena, California. Be sure to tell us the call letters of your station. This booklet will come by return mail absolutely free of charge. Be sure to request the current number of the Plain Truth magazine with up-to-the-moment articles in the light of Bible prophecy on world affairs, trends, and conditions, and showing you the outcome in the future. It's free of charge, the Plain Truth magazine. It's also full color. The address again in just a moment. Until next time, this is Garner Ted Armstrong saying goodbye, friends.
You have heard The World Tomorrow. Send your letters to Herbert W. Armstrong, Post Office Box 111, Pasadena, California.